Hello and hi. Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we have a double feature interview for you. Two writer-directors for some brand new indie horror films that are out. First up, we have William McGregor, the writer-director of the suspense gothic drama film Gwen. And after that, we have Martin Pickering, who is the co-writer and director of another very atmospheric film set in the UK, Wicked Witches. Both of these movies are very different in tone and feel, and both entertaining in their own way. So stay tuned as we dive right into those interviews. And my guest today is William McGregor, the writer-director of a new gothic drama suspense film called Gwen, which is filmed entirely, I believe, in the Welsh locales, because the cinematography is gorgeous and the slow-burning tension is both annoying and satisfying. So welcome, William.
Thanks for having me, Sophie. Yeah, no, we shot in North Wales, and the landscape was a really big part of the inspiration for the story, and definitely supplied a lot of the epic scale, but also tension for the film. Quite a dread-filled, fueled film.
So you are also the writer. Where did the inspiration for this tale come from?
Well, actually, I've always been inspired by fairy tales, and I made a short film called Who's Afraid of the Water Sprite, which is actually based on Eastern European fairy tales. I filmed it in Slovenia. It was very much a straight fairy tale, in a way inspired by like Angela Carter and the Company of Wolves and things like Pan's Labyrinth, Guillermo del Toro, it's inspired by magical realism. I had that film at a student film festival, and a producer called Hidri Bevan-Jones saw that short, and she liked the way I'd used the landscape and told the story, and she has a lot of connections with North Wales in terms of family and having filmed there before, and she suggested, and this is probably about 9 years ago now, that I go and explore North Wales and that I might find it inspiring. So I did, with the idea of adapting Who's Afraid of the Water Sprite into a feature-length film. What actually happened is learning about the Industrial Revolution in that landscape, seeing these quarries, these sort of torn open parts of the mountains. The story quickly evolved from being a straight up fairy tale and became more about a historical piece that was imbued with folk tradition and folk belief. So it still had that gothic element to it, but now had more of a grounding in history as well.
And the story, it plays with some of your perceptions, because I'm going to try to avoid spoilers here. What first appears to be a haunted scenario turns into a viral threat scenario with a totally different source to it. How's that?
Yeah. So I think a part of the inspiration for the film for me was exploring where fear comes from. And I love the idea of dread and creating that tension. And dread is really just fear of what's out there in the dark that you can't see, that you can't understand. And I think as this young girl growing up telling her stories, her story, is it that she's afraid of her mother? Is it that she's afraid of something outside in the dark? Or is there something else that she should be afraid of? And I think her making sense of the world, you know, it wasn't like I set out with the idea of creating a twist. It was more just a natural part of storytelling of a young girl starting to understand her mother more and understand the world she lives in. And I think that takes you on a journey in the film where the source of the fear evolves.
Yeah, I think it comes across, it slowly dawns that her story comes from a place of confusion about not knowing anything about what's going on around her. She's afraid of her dad not being there. She's afraid of her mom not behaving the way she remembers. And just everybody else around her sort of keeping things from her because she's just a child. And wading through that cloud of uncertainty and the fear of not knowing what to do in the face of that uncertainty because there's no, shall we say, stable support system was a delight from how you drew it out, because it was taking so long. And it made me feel her confusion, which was a brilliant touch, by the way.
Yeah, I think you just want to create an atmosphere of suspicion. And I think in order to see the world through her eyes, there was a lot of, even in the script stage and still in the edit, paring things back and removing parts of the story that maybe would have explained too much. You know, if you're really experiencing with her, you're trying to only show the audience as much as possible just what she can see and what she understands. And I think that builds the mystery as well, without cheating people, because, you know, you want to create suspense, but it'd be a kind of character-driven experience.
So where did you find the young actresses? Because the way they reflect the story that's going on around them was just so well done.
Yeah, so Eleanor I'd actually seen in the Enfield Haunting, which was a British Sky TV show, where she plays a possessed young girl, and she's so fantastic in it that she got a BAFTA nomination. And she's, yeah, just someone that Andy Pryor, our casting director, suggested, and just, you know, blew me away with her audition. And then the young girl who plays her sister, Jodie, was a local actress that we, you know, we found through casting in the area, and just let the two of them get on together. And, you know, the rehearsals weren't really reading lines or running the scenes. It was them going out together. Jodie likes rock climbing, so we went rock climbing, even though I hate heights. But it was just getting them all together and getting them to know each other. So when they were on set together, they had that chemistry and that bond.
Nice. So what for you as a director was the most challenging or the most exciting thing to film for this project?
I think the challenge was the climate. So we're filming in November in Snowdonia in Wales, and that is a very harsh, brutal climate. That we had 70 mile an hour winds, we had flooding and snow, but at the same time, that's a really important part of the story, and the climate and the weather adds to the atmosphere. So it was a challenge, but also a joy, because I think it informed and improved the film.
And you also included some actual Welsh dialogue, too.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of the situation, at that point in history, they would have spoken entirely in Welsh. And I think it's just such a beautiful part of the landscape, is the language. They feel so connected. I would love to have put more in, to be honest with you, not only for historical accuracy, but just for the texture of the film. I think I would have struggled as a non-Welsh speaker. I have Welsh speakers in my family, but I think as the first-time writer-director, it might have been a step too far for me. But it was important to me that we included the language, definitely.
So what else was important to you to have included in the story that you made sure got across to the audience?
I quite like folk beliefs and little traditions that maybe have a logic to them that people have practiced throughout history. So from researching the beliefs of the region, the idea of breaking a skull open to release bad luck, and not feeling the need to explain why your character's doing this, but it's just a part of their everyday life. That was something I felt strongly about, you know, not over-explaining the details, just letting that be a texture. And also add to the suspicion, because if you don't know why she's doing it, you know, it could be supernatural. So yeah, that was something I felt very strongly about.
Cool. So where are you going next? Is this going to leap off to other folk tales in other areas of the UK, or something different totally for your next work?
So I'm still touring the film, doing Q&As with the film out in the cinema in the UK, but I'm also writing two more scripts at the moment. One with Film 4 and the BFI, which is a revenge thriller set in this world of badger baiting, which is this pretty horrific blood sport. And I have a lead character who basically becomes a vigilante trying to stop it. And that's a present day story, but again, set within the rural landscape. But I'm also starting to write, I'm in the outlining phase of an idea I've had for a ghost story, because I love M.R. James, and I would love to be able to make a haunting contemporary ghost story. So I'm working on that too.
So modern day ghost stories have the challenge of too much technology around. Are you going to tackle that, or are you still working those kinks out?
Yeah, I think it's weirdly, ghost stories work very well in a historical context, just through the nature of the Gothic, and removing things from the everyday heightens it. And I think, you know, that's why I love The Innocents, because you escape to this period which is uncanny in that it's different to ours. But I think there's settings, so again, rural settings, where you can set something in the present day, but yet it feel Gothic and timeless. For example, an antiquated old farm somewhere, I think, might be able to try and create that atmosphere.
Cool. So where can people find you online to keep track of what you're working on now and next?
So Twitter, at Willie McG, W-I-L-L-I-E, McGregor. So, yeah, pretty easy to find. I probably spend too much time on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter is addicting. It has its high points, but it's also got its low moments. I'll give you that there. Well, the film is Gwen. It is out in theaters August
16th, I believe. Oh. Yeah.
I'll have the exact dates in the show notes, where people will be able to find it on video on demand. And if you're into Gothic drama with a great deal of suspense as well as lush scenery, I'd recommend folks checking Gwen out. So thank you, William, for your time today.
Oh, no, thank you very much.
And again, we'll have links to where you can find William online and to where you can check out Gwen. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest right now is Martin Pickering, one of the Pickering brothers, who is responsible for the new indie horror movie Wicked Witches from Midnight Releasing, which should be available on digital platforms and DVD right now. And this is a very atmospheric, very creepy, very old school sort of slow-paced psychological horror that literally plays with your mind and your perceptions. Welcome, Martin.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. Now, this was a very interesting movie. I was expecting something more action-y, based on part of what I saw in the trailer, and to find out that this was a slow rolling, we're going to play with your mind and your perceptions kind of thing was a very nice surprise. So let me read the description here. After being thrown out of his home by his wife for being promiscuous, Mark finds himself back at Dumpling Farm, a place of youthful memories and parties, but things aren't quite right. his old buddy Ian, who has never left the place, is possessed by a group of demonic flesh-eating witches. Using Ian and his farm, these beautiful witches honey-trap Mark and his friends and to consume their souls. Now, first of all, that's just a very intriguing description. But you and your brother Mark came up with this film. Tell me where it came from and what inspired you to actually get this made as a film.
Well, I mean, I've been making films, short films for a while. You know, I make like music videos and other things. Like, you know, I make a living out of doing this, you know, being a director. And me and my brother, you know, after making a few short films, we realized nothing really came of it. You know, we didn't, you know, it was a little pat on the back. Well, okay, well, I want to make some, you know, like some success from something, you know, possibly, you know, make some money back maybe, move into like feature films. I was like, okay, you've got a good idea for films. So he already wrote a song called The Witches of Dumbling Farm. And it was about a dream that he had while he lived at this farm. So the character's kind of based on Mark when he moved to this farm called Dumbling Farm. So yeah, he had this horrible dream. He wrote a song about it. And I was like, that's going to be a good film. If we make a film about you going back to this farm and you can, you know, just have a big massacre there, a big party, a massacre, but make it kind of psychological, make it kind of creepy. You know, I mean, I've had influences when, you know, The Shining was quite an influence to me for this. You know, if you watch that, the sort of lead up to it is kind of like creepy and doesn't hit hard straight away. The music and the scenery and the camera movement makes you feel uneasy from the start, you know. So that's kind of, yeah, how I looked at it in a way, you know. And also I had other influences as well, like from, you know, Dusk Till Dawn, it just suddenly kicks off as a vampire film, you know. It's a bit like that, even though you get a bit of an idea earlier that something's not quite right, you know.
Yeah, I have to throw out a great big round of applause to was it the actor who plays Ian?
Yeah,
he puts a new twist on Renfield, let's just say. And, he fully embraced that that special level of crazy, and it was very, very effective and very unnerving, which is kind of the point in this film, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he, like, Justin's a great actor, and, you know, I actually, funnily enough, with the short films I did, that's how I met him, through a short film I did, and he was at the, he had a film at a festival that, the same festival as my film went into. And I just was quite impressed by him in the film I saw that he was in before that, and I was like, yeah, and so he did a couple of things for me before this film. We connected, and I really got on with him, and I thought he had a lot of talent. And he ended up being right for this Ian role, you know. I mean, if not a bit too intense, but at the same time, you know, Mark in the film doesn't really know, like, what he's doing. You know, he sort of lost his mind a little bit anyway. So it's kind of, you know, Ian does, you know, unease the audience, but Mark doesn't really notice it initially, you know, because he's just too wrapped up in his own life, you know. But yeah.
Now, did you ask Justin to do any sort of special embodiments of just special direction to get this, or did he just read the script and said, okay, yeah, I'll run with this?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of both, really. I mean, he definitely brought a lot to the, you know, the set when he turned up, but you know, obviously me and Mark have like a really good idea of what we want from, you know, scenes and from our actors, and so yeah, we definitely give, you know, good, you know, it's more like on set input really rather than, you know, beforehand. I mean, we give them a little idea beforehand, but more like on set we kind of like say, you know, this guy is like really like possessed by these demonic witches, you know, or whatever the kind of, you know, motive might be. But yeah, no, he's a great actor, and we were really lucky to have him on this, actually.
Now, the was it Duncan Casey who plays Mark? His journey is a little bit different because We open the movie with him getting thrown out of the house by his wife, and he's emotionally distraught. You know, he obviously loves his wife, his family, and it seemed like he was going on a bit of a self-pity, self-loathing, perhaps a little bit of guilt trip at the beginning with the deep dive, which we can assume had him distracted from Ian's off behavior. Yeah. Was that intentional? Was that supposed to reflect his interaction with both Ian and later the witches? Just he's so distracted by his own despair that he doesn't see what's going on until problems ensue?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, and actually, you know, people can be pretty selfish and, you know, introspective and not really realize what's going on in real life and be, you know, there's a lot of that, you know, even Mark's not that likable initially in this because of that, I think. You know, you might feel a little bit of pity for him, but actually he's like, you know, obviously kind of selfish. He likes his alcohol and maybe he's a little bit of an alcoholic, you know, when you see him in the shop and he cracks open that can of beer and downs it because he's desperate for a beer. It's like, you know, the guy's on the edge, and this just adds to his psychological breakdown, you know, like the torment from the witches and from, you know, Ian and the horrible dreams he has when he's there. So that's what this film's meant to be. It's meant to be Mark's, you know, demise, you know, from basically making bad decisions in his life when he's probably too old and to be doing that with a family, you know. So yeah, it's kind of punishment for being a, you know, being a horrible person. But yeah, you know, he does get a bit of retribution in some of the film, as you know, you see later on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we won't spoil things too much, but
no.
Were the nightmares that we see Mark having? You mentioned your brother was inspired to make this song about this event because of his own nightmares. Was there a parallel to that? And were Mark's nightmares meant to be a manifestation of his guilt, or were they supposed to be prophetic in what was going to come?
Yeah, more probably prophetic on what's about to come, because yeah, I mean, when Mark had, you know, in real life, when Mark had these dreams, you know, it was just, you know, a horrible dream he had. He wrote a really quite a good little song about it, which is in the film, actually. The song was played later on in the party scene. Well, actually, some of the stuff in the dreams was actually from the dreams that Mark had, you know. So, for example, like, the dream when, you know, I won't spoil things too much for the audience, but there's a couple of moments in dreams he had which actually, you know, was the same the dreams that Mark had. This basically like woman screaming as loud as she can with like blood pouring out of her mouth, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why like the blood comes out of the mouth and stuff as well, because you know, Mark sort of dreamed these ideas up, you know.
Now, the cinematography in this is amazing. I'm guessing you guys made use of some strategic drone usage.
Yeah, but also, I mean, we do this for a living, you know. I do this for other... I'm actually a cinematographer myself as well as a director. I've been doing this for a long time. So these years of like experience have built me up to a point where I can use a really sort of small camera and like, but just some beautiful little lenses and make things look beautiful, you know? So yeah, I mean, that really, and where we live, it kind of lent itself to that because, you know, we live out in the country in near Cambridgeshire, which is the beginning of the Fens. Which is kind of like, as you go further down the Fens, it's a bit like, you know, the Hills Have Eyes, you know? It can be, you know, there's some really weird little places out there, and you know, that's why it lent itself to our film, you know, because it gives a sense of isolation when Mark's driving, you know, to dump the farm or wherever he's driving to. And yeah, but obviously with the use of the drones, that was also because it wasn't just to get like the cinematic effect, but which some people didn't, you know, I've seen some reviews and some people didn't, I don't think they realized actually, like, you know, in your imagination, which is fly, right? So that's kind of him being watched a lot of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why I want to make it feel like he's been watched a lot of the film. You know, a bit like The Shining, where he's been followed it by the camera, driving up to that big horrible hotel. And there's a lot of those kind of like shots where it's just kind of observatory almost, you know, of like people doing things. So yeah, I just felt that that lent itself to the sense of witches following Mark around.
Oh, okay. That makes a little bit of sense. I just thought it was more to establish how remote and how isolated he was getting. Because you see, like, first you see shops and cars, and then all of a sudden you see nothing. And you realize how isolated he's going to be and how, shall we say, challenging his next few days are about to be.
Yeah. Yeah, he thinks he's got a new start, but it's like the worst thing in the world, you know. But yeah, no, it is also to do with the witches, you know, like the, you know, because there's little hints in, you know, the chase scene where she possibly flies. Well, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but yeah, you'll see what I mean. If there's anyone listening to this one, you know, watches that later. But yeah, it's meant to also, yeah, sort of, you know. You know, feel like the witches are falling or about a bit, you know.
Cool.
Because later on in the film, you kind of realize, no, I'm going to spoil stuff, so I'm going to leave it there.
But I know exactly what you're talking about, so we'll just let it be a surprise for listeners who haven't seen it yet. Now, talk a little bit about the effects with the witches, because a lot of that looked practical.
Yeah, most of it is. There's only a few bits we added later, which was a few like blood splatters and, you know, gore slashes. But really, most of it is practical. It's where people like spraying blood on people and, you know, a team of people like, you know, making sure that all looked really good on set. I think general practical effects look better, and I'd rather, you know, kind of try and do that well enough, you know, to make it entertaining rather than just like all computer stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, your three witches were troopers, especially the scenes where they're out in the woods. You know, mild spoiler massacre. The teeth, I have to say, are horrifying. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it was kind of funny because the makeup artist, I sort of gave her a brief, and then she's really good, by the way, like Sarah Panigata. She's a really good makeup artist too, and she helped me out. You know, she did a lot for like kind of like not very much money, like a lot of people did on this job. And yeah, when she first started it, she did this like idea of a witch. It just wasn't the right thing. I was like, oh. No, that's not it. We have to, like, we're on the sharpest teeth ever and like, the blackest eyes ever and the whitest skin and, like, veins popping out. You know, they need to be, like, demonic, you know, like, satanic witches. So she came back with, and it was perfect the second time. So, we went with that sort of black-eyed, sharp teeth, demonic-looking thing.
For you, what was the most fun or the most exciting thing to do in regards to filming this, putting it together? Because you guys did the editing and post-production as well, right?
Yeah. It took a long time, really. I mean, me and my brother both do different things for work. And, you know, trying to fit it into, like, making money and, you know, that kind of thing was kind of difficult. And it all took a long time. So Mark did an amazing job on all the sound design. He did most of that, and then the music, he got his friends who are really good musicians, and some people I know I've worked with before, great musicians, so we sort of combination of his score and their score all kind of worked together really well. And these are our good mates, you know, we just so I happen to be surrounded by people that are talented that can help us do these things, you know. But the editing, yeah, some of that was probably the more exciting bit. Like, I mean, everything was exciting, shooting it all, but actually, you know, a long shooting on a shoestring budget when there are long days, I'm doing all the camera work and directing them, driving the van around and picking up the heads, at the heads and the limbs and the blood from the prop guys in London, and then driving out this country and having to return out the next day. So it was a graft, you know, it was hard work. And even though I did enjoy it all, I think the best bit really for me was seeing it come together, yeah, in the edit. That was great.
Good. So what other things are you guys planning on? Are you just sitting back doing, like, promoting this for now and then get working on your next project later?
Well, I've always got ideas for future projects, and you know, I've written a couple of other films. I've got a feature film that's totally not horror at all, just based on like the sort of 90s generation Oasis. But then they've also got another horror, well, a thriller stroke horror film in the pipeline. I've got a couple of writers, and actually Kit Proudfoot, the guy who's in the film, Stevie, his mate, he's a good writer. Well, him and his mate Matt are going to be, well, at the moment they're writing helping me write a script for a film that's about a maniac from, and it's going to be based in the sort of same kind of area where, you know, where we had the horror film. So this sort of maniac, this sort of, you know, inbred kind of crazy fucker, he destroys this guy's life, and sort of, it's like a stalker. It's almost like Cape Fear of the Fens, but an inbred, horrible, like Hills of Eyes version. So that's my next project, actually. And I'm going to be at the American Film Market trying to get funding for that in October. So, yeah, with this now, this film that we did, you know, I almost, like, you know, didn't realise we were going to get a distribution deal for it, and maybe it would go as far as it has. So it's nice that we had that to back us up for the next project, and hopefully, yeah, be making another nice horror film soon.
Well, good luck with that. Now, is horror your favorite genre to write in, or do you, like, just write whatever sort of pops into your head?
Well, I think it's definitely the most fun one to do, for sure. You know, like, even the filming and everything, it was brilliant, really good fun. But, no, I do have other, yeah, sort of other ideas. You know, so, for example, my short films that I did, one of them was quite, you know, kind of tackling social issues like, you know, addiction, alcoholism, things like that, you know, like people, you know, so, you know, struggling. So I have got that other side that, you know, I kind of want to at some point maybe delve into, which kind of relates to that other film I was telling you about the 90s. So yeah, you know, I've got definitely other interests in, from horror, but I think it's definitely been a fun way into, like, the actual feature film world. And you know, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing another one, to be honest. Can't wait.
So what makes horror fun for you?
Well, it's just, I mean, the thing is, it's one of those where it's being dark's kind of like fun, isn't it? You know, it's kind of horrible, but it's also just, you know, I've lived, you know, I've got like two kids, I've got a wife that doesn't like watching horror films, so I've kind of had a while where I can't watch horror films that much. But, you know, when I was younger, me and my brother used to watch them all the time, and we'd be laughing at the horror, you know. So like if something's really scary, it makes me laugh, you know. I don't know if you get that, but yeah. I get that, you know.
Yeah, that's a common reaction, actually, the laughter, yeah, to sort of decompress the tension of the situation.
Yeah, because if it's something that kind of like really is kind of horrible looking or scary, it just kind of, you know, makes me laugh because it is that scary, you know. So, for example, the Amityville Horror, you know, there's a scene in that where she's, you know, talks in like this horrible possessed voice when she's like breaking down the wall underneath the stairs. And she stopped and she says this horrible possessed line, and that makes me laugh because it's so terrifying. But yeah, so that's why I like horror, and that's why, you know, I want to make more, because it is really fun, to be honest. It's fun to get involved with that stuff, and it also makes you realise, like, makes you less scared of other horror films in a way, because you realise actually it's kind of like people are covered in fake blood and stuff, you know.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Martin, thank you for such a weirdly atmospheric film in Wicked Witches, and good luck with the funding on your next project.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Again, that's Martin Pickering, the director of Wicked Witches from Midnight Releasing. It is out now on DVD and digital. So go check it out if you can. If you like a really trippy kind of horror with some nasty looking witches. Again, thanks, Martin.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock. Peter Watts. Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
And yes, if you're interested in indie horror, both of these movies are worth checking out in their own right. Gwen is a better overall story, but it's not 100% horror, as you might expect. There is a suspense dread element to it, but it's not full-blown horror as people have become used to. Wicked Witches is more along that line. The story isn't quite as strong, but the cinematography and the strong special effects sort of make up for that. And if you, I guess, pay attention a little bit more closely to some of what's implied in the lead character's, shall we say, disintegration, it makes the film a bit more interesting. And it also makes me wonder what they had to leave out for budget reasons. I really do. And yes, I will reiterate, the makeup on the three witches is horrifying. It's absolutely terrifying almost. It's the teeth. It really is the teeth. Like in Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, the mouth of Sauron, those teeth wigged me out. I was not expecting that in a fantasy movie. Completely wigged me out. It's the teeth, I think. I don't know. I knew I had a thing about bugs with like 5 million legs, but I didn't realize I had a thing about teeth now. Gonna have to examine that a little bit. Actually, I know where that came from. Not gonna go there. Anyway, we have some more indie horror coming up. Dread Presents has a new movie coming out, maybe it just came out, called Hoax. Ben Browder is one of the leads in that, and it's funny. They're not trying to be campy funny, but a lot of it comes across as just sharp, wicked snark. And we have interviews with some of those folks coming up soon. You need to see this movie. It's actually a lot of fun when you get into it. And then the end of it is just absolutely disgusting. Absolutely gore-inducingly. Ugh. And I think the overkill is what they were going for. you need to see it. You need to see it when you can. I think, I'm trying to remember. Well, the Hugo Awards are going on this weekend, so I expect some news from that tomorrow night. There's also, I found out, something called PowerCon, which is going on, which is all about Eternia and He-Man and She-Ra. And I expect I know that we will be hearing some news coming out from that. Let's just leave it there and let Sunday's news unfold. Yeah, that's all the news I have for right now. I will have more later, I promise. But if you have any questions or comments related to the interviews or the news, please feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and Player FM. And if you could, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. The reviews let people know that there are other people liking what they hear in this show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. We need the support. We really, really need the support. So anything you can do, word of mouth. I know all of our interviews are not everyone's cup of tea, but if you come across an interview you like, tell somebody about it. Let them know that they should give a listen if it's something they're interested in. You can follow us on Twitter, where I do converse with listeners, fans, and other folks who are reporting the news or commenting on the news. That handle is @SliceOfSciFi. You can also check us out on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. I'd like to throw a shout out to Neil, who has been handling all of the Facebook curated news and content. So thank you, Neil. Give Neil a shout out, a thumbs up over on Facebook if you follow us on Facebook. And of course, we have the website right here, sliceofscifi.com, where you can check out other interviews. We have written interviews now and again, as well as the reviews from various movies and TV shows. If I get my act together, I'm hoping to have posted this week a 5 episodes in review of both Killjoy season 5 and Pennyworth. Who's watching Pennyworth? Anyway, I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting our efforts here at Slice of Sci-Fi, over at Writers After Dark, Babylon Podcast, and just helping keep all of these things online, because a lot of these shows mean a lot to me. And I'm hoping that by producing them, by putting out this content, they also mean something to you. And for everyone who is supporting through Patreon or through PayPal, my heartfelt thanks goes out to all of you. I'm open to suggestions for having a fundraising drive, a supporter push. Let me know what you think might work, because I could really use a few more contributors, pledges, patrons. I want to be able to get to the point where I don't have to pay everything out of pocket all the time. My personal financial situation is not great. There's a whole long story there I really can't go into. Not here, anyway. But everyone who is supporting financially through donations every now and then through PayPal or through regular pledges through Patreon, every dime you send my way helps support the costs of the web hosting, of the media hosting, and I cannot fully express how grateful I am to all of you. It's thank you never seems like enough. But I will say it again right here. Thank you all, every one of you. If you would like to add your support, patreon.com/sliceofscifi is the place to go if you want to add your contributions on a monthly basis, being a regular patron, or if you just want to send a couple bucks every now and then. The link to use is paypal.me/scifisummer. Now, I should reiterate, all the supporters, you get perks. If you read the perks over on the Patreon page, patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi, I pick a lucky supporter every month. And the PayPal supporters, the regular supporters, are in that pool too. I ask them, do they want a DVD? Do they want a Blu-ray? Do they want a book? Do they want horror, science fiction, fantasy? And I give them a list of something that they might be interested in, and they pick a prize, and I send it to them. It's the best way I know of to express how grateful I am for the support, and also find new homes for some of this cool swag that I get that I really don't have space for right now. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. No, I do. I get all these books, I get all these DVDs, and the ones I don't keep, I have no problem passing them on. I really don't. So my commitment to providing reviews and interviews based on the stuff that publishers are sending me, I pass on to you. So thank you. I'd like to also send a heartfelt thanks and a loving shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the theme music to Slice of Sci-Fi. Those guys are close to my heart, and I should ask them if they have an album coming out soon, because it should almost be about time for a new album. I'll have to look into that. If you like your rock and roll geek flavored, go check out more of their music, their songs. They have a whole bunch of free songs available. They have an entire catalog of CDs that you can check out. The place to go is sci-fried.com. I highly recommend the video for A Tall Ship over on their YouTube channel. Also, Zombie Prison Blues. Of the free songs they have, I believe a delightful ballad is one called Hulk Smash from their previous album. And there's one they did a long time ago that we featured on the Babylon podcast. It's their cover of Metallica's For Whom the Bell Tolls. The song is For Whom Babylon Tolls, and it is a Babylon 5 song. Babylon 5, still alive. Go check that one out if you can. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.